Hi there, everybody. Welcome to Season 4, Episode 24 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and owner of Peterborough United. We're recording on Wednesday of this week. And since the last pod, you had the Portsmouth game, wasn't it, on Saturday, which from all accounts, you played well or you didn't deserve to lose, but came out on the losing side.
Yeah, it was... I had to take a long walk after that, but what was I screaming as I was walking out? I was like, fucking big clubs always fucking get the luck, you know what I mean? But that would be disrespectful of Portsmouth because they're top of the league for a reason. They've been there all season. I thought we were excellent defensively. I thought we were excellent in midfield. And I thought our front line, for the first time probably in a while, was, how could I put this, blunt.
Yeah,
they weren't at the races. We got two of the best wide players in the league. You know, the manager dropped Ricky from Malik. Yeah, I thought up front we were blunt. And you can pay compliment to the Portsmouth back line. They were very resilient. They're very good at what they do. But I thought, that was a game that if our front players showed up, we win it comfortably. Now, I heard Portsmouth had a lot of injuries. Their fans are telling me so. You know, fair enough. They dug in. They got a late winner, 15 minutes to go. Kind of took the sting out of us. We didn't really react. Yeah, I'd like that one back, but you can't get those big ones back. So as I said to you before that game, you know, that was our chance to see, are we ready to win a title? And I guess the answer is no, not yet. So, okay, that happens. That's fine. You know, we didn't get dominated. We didn't, you know, we still controlled the game. We still had, you know, the most possession, you know, didn't create enough chances, you know, probably didn't press them as hard. You know, maybe, I don't know, Ricky was in. Who knows? You know what I mean? We just, you know, and again, that's that unsung thing. I've always spoken about Ricky, you know, what he did against Northampton, what he did in those 3-4 games previous. You know, even when he scored against Burton and whatever else, it's that pressing, it's that. You know, and obviously you don't have anyone else like him and whatever, but Malik probably deserved a chance because he had a good cameo against Burton. But yeah, it didn't come off. Disappointing. But you got to move on. You know, the managers, really good chat. You know, they're having a few days break now because I think we're playing like 8-9 games in like a month, 5 weeks.
You're playing until Good Friday.
Yeah, international break. So we've got a few players now, obviously, have gone away. Hopefully, touch wood, they come back. Positives from the game against Portsmouth. Ryan De Havilland looked like a central midfielder. And, you know, our fans all seem to think he's just a number 10. He wasn't bought for that reason. You know, he's a young player, he's developing. And I think he stepped in, he was brilliant. And I thought Joel Randall was exceptional. Joel can get criticism at time, but I thought he was one. Him and Ryan were excellent. Probably everyone else was kind of like, you know, not at the 8s and 9s they've been at, you know, whatever. But that happens, you know, big game. I thought it was well reffed. I thought the atmosphere was good. And, you know, frustrating, you know, because you want to win that game and give yourself a chance and, you know, whatever else. Probably too far now to reach because they're so far ahead. But we've got 8-9 games left, including the cup game. We've got to win them all. You know, you're at that stage of the season now where you've got nothing to lose. You just got to go out and win them all. It's been a phenomenal season. You've got to put the foot in the accelerator, try and score some goals, try and put some numbers up, try and finish the season strongly, you know, and whether that's chasing autos, playoffs, whatever it might be, just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, that one game's not going to define the season, you know, because you look back and go, there's other moments and whatever. But, yeah, frustrating, you know. But I thought, yeah, good crowd. Good atmosphere, and unfortunate.
You talk about the atmosphere and the crowd. I think Darren afterwards said that, you know, he may have wished that there weren't 4,000 Pompey fans there. I'm sure from a financial perspective, it was good to have 4,000 Pompey fans there.
Yeah, I don't want salacious headlines again. I don't want people trying to, you know, I saw straight away the media, the stuff that was posted, and they created a thing on Twitter, and I had people coming at me, and I was like, oh, fuck, when I heard the comments, I was like, oh. You know, yeah, I know, you know, and you know, I spoke to him afterwards and I said, you know, you can blame me for that. You know, Chris, the ticket people, don't take the blame. We're a business. We're a League One business that loses £3-4 million a year. We can't turn down, I think Chris said it was 30. I think it was more like 55 grand. We can't turn down that opportunity. And there were still tickets for sale on the day. So I'm not sure we would have sold the prerequisite amount we'd need.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a club like Peterborough can't turn down that kind of income and revenue when they lose so much money. And second to that, you know, we might have sold a player in January, but we didn't get paid. Mm-hmm. We kept that player. And, you know, even with the debts we have, you know, to give ourselves a fighting chance. So What that then means is the flip to that is you can't do that where you're giving that stand to big clubs, you know, not giving them the tickets, you know. So you have to, I have to a few heads on. I have to have the football head on, where I get what the manager's saying. Totally get it. You know, he wants to have posh fans in those stands. Totally get that. We did it against Cambridge. It's a derby. We're always going to sell 12,000 to our own fans. You know what I mean? Not necessarily going to work against the Portsmouth. And you love that atmosphere, and I get it. You know, it's like, you know, you want as much chance to win as possible. It's not the reason we didn't win. We've beaten Portsmouth, I think, four of the last 5 years at home in front of similar crowds. We've actually beaten them, you know, even the COVID season, we've beaten them, you know, so it's never, but I get what he's saying. But at the same time, I think if you look at the game and whatever else, you know, that didn't dictate who won and lost, you know, at the end of the day. We just, you know, we just were blunt when it mattered, which is unlike us. It's a one-off, you know, so I'm not getting in a row, he said, she said, and you know, I don't want my guys who work for me fighting and rowing over it, whatever else. But I will just say, we're a business. We don't have the luxury of turning down any kind of excess revenue that we can get.
I don't think any League One or League Two club can turn down any, you know, if you can sell, you want to sell as many away tickets as you can fit in the stadium.
Right, exactly. And look, if you flip it, and let's say the Bolton game, it's the final game of the season, and you think that's going to be a decider, Prados or whatever else, and, you know, who knows? With enough advance notice, and you think that could determine, you know, do you make a decision then? And do you think, okay, Peterborough fans will definitely show up, like your derby, we will comfortably sell that out. But again, I have to make financial decisions. You know, it's my job to make sure everyone gets paid. It's my job to give the manager everything he needs. It's my job to ensure that, you know, we've got a list of things we need to do. I just can't turn down money. It was like recently when we got the phone call about the Stevenage game. Do you want to earn 30 grand and play on a Wednesday night or keep it on the Tuesday night? You know, we can't turn that business down, you know. So that's just unfortunately the you know, I said this last week, when you get a mil and a half in TV in revenue from, you know, TV related deals, it's not moving the needle. Not when your salary is four times that or whatever, or three and a half times that, you know. So we do what we do as a League One club our size. Look, if we had Bradford's 25,000 every week, maybe it's an easy decision to make. And that's not a slight on my fans, because my fans have just constantly showed up nonstop all season.
No, we do it. I mean, when we have big traveling contingent, then we will make every seat, every block available. We'll, you know, take the covers off one of the stands behind the goals, because you want to sell tickets at the end of the day.
Yeah, of course. And for our fans, they're spending a lot of money recently. They got season tickets. They got the cup final. You know, they showed up and whatever else, and to constantly like go put them under that pressure of, hey, we're going to like stick Portsmouth in the corner, and that means now we've got to sell an extra 3,000-4,000 to Peterborough fans to fill up the rest. It's a big ask constantly, you know, and particularly at this, you know, time in our current situation economically worldwide, it's just, you know, nobody's doing better financially, so it's tough asking people constantly pile out and pay. So let's leave it as it is. No more headlines. Swanee, if you're listening, don't be writing headlines. You know, the manager, when I explained it to him, he understood and he got it, you know, and whatever, and you know, it is what it is. You know, at the end of the day, he's passionate after a game, and you know, it's quite normal. So, and then I think Chris, you know, said something on Twitter the next day and whatever, and I woke up on a Sunday, I was like, oh, fuck's sake, this is carrying on. It's just like, let's everyone just chill and relax here, okay? Because, you know, having little, you know, rooks and stuff like that.
Don't try and blame a defeat on this.
No, we don't want to go down that road. And I don't need people either getting sensitive or defending their position either, because they don't need to. You know, Chris and his guys do a fucking phenomenal job. So there's never any time he needs to come out and say anything in defense, because he's got massive support and you know, free will from everybody, or you know, because he's just so good at his job, and he's done a great, as his ticket department, they've all done a great job. And just with the cup final, we've got 20,000 sold, and I know that is quite humorous to some of the big clubs fans who've been slagging us off.
I don't get
some Bradford fans have come out as well and dug us, you know, and whatever. It's magnificent. I think it's magnificent, you know. I think it's great.
I don't understand the whole we've got more fans than you, so you know, we're a bigger club, or all those things. I think that 20,000 to take to Wembley for you know, given your average gates,
yeah,
is, and you know, you still, how long, 2-3 weeks away?
It's growth. Like, we've gone from being, you know, in my time, 3,000, 4,500, 5,500, 6,500, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 in the champ. you know, last time we were at the Cup, I think we brought 19, and we're already going to surpass that, and we might even get towards 22, 23, 24. So I look at it and go, that's all great news. It's just growth. It's upward trajectory. It's new fans. It's new experiences. And I hope some of the people who go to Wembley go, fucking love this, and this is great. And now we're going to go buy tickets and, you know, and smash season tickets. And Chris and his department, that's all they've done is the last couple of years, they've been surpassing every level and every target. And I said to them 2 days ago, myself and Clive, the marketing manager, your next challenge is fill up the Carlisle game, you know. So you know, it's easy. Maybe it's for the sexy ties. Now let's see what we can do for the Carlisle, and because, you know, God love the Carlisle fans. It's a long way to travel, so you're not going to get 1,000, 3,000, 4,000 Carlisle fans.
And they're not on the best of form.
No, and regardless of that, even if they won every game, you know, that is a fucking, that's an airplane ride. Do you know what I mean? It comes. So you're not going to get your Portsmouth crowd. You're not going to get your Northampton, your Cambridge. So. Look, everyone's doing a great job at the club, and including our manager. And just sometimes, you know, we in certain times just look at things and say things and whatever else. And the cold light of day, I think common sense prevails and everyone realises, including Darren, because, you know, there hasn't been a time I've said no to anything this season. And, you know, our agreement is whenever I don't say no, it's because you understand I'm doing everything I can here. I'm going to give you what I can. And in the event I do say no, you just have to understand that because you're still getting most of the stuff you want. So, you know, he gets that too. So, yeah, storm the teacup, we move on. And as for the people slagging us off about our lack of fans going to Wembley, you know, you could only fucking wish you were going to Wembley.
Well, I was going to say, I'd rather be in your situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I mean to, like, to the doubters and the naysayers and the moaners. Well, you know, fuck off, because I'm going to defend my fan base. And, you know, I think it's a magnificent effort. They're donating tickets for people and families who can't go. We've matched some money there. Free Kicks Foundation is an unbelievable program. That means there's people can't usually afford to go to a game can go because of the generosity of our fan base. Yeah. So to see other fans like take digs and be sly and whatever else, you know, and I don't want to see if Wickham don't sell as many as us, I don't want to see my fans having a go at them. You know, your club's your club. You do what you can. Yeah. You know, again, like I said, everything's more expensive out there. So, you know, I know ourselves, like our hotel bill for Wembley, just for one night, you know, is fucking 18 grand. Mm-hmm. You know, just the price of stuff to stay in places, you know, looking at pre-season trips and, you know, the inflation, you know. Let's blame it on COVID, like I said in those early podcasts. You lock the fucking countries up, this is you're going to pay the piper. We're all paying the piper. So with every fucking bill that we have in our life, it's just gone right that way, you know. So anyway, here's what it is. Let's move on from posh because we've had a break and we've got everyone away at the moment. Let's talk Bradford. Yeah. Like I said to you, I had no idea there was a game last night. And unfortunately, you guys seem to have the beach towels out.
It wasn't pretty. So, yeah, we talked in the last pod that we lost to Forest Green at home. And so we had a series of three home games. And, you know, we came off the back of that, having a good win at Accrington, really seeing the playoffs in sight. And now you've got three games at home to kick on. Well, we lost Forest Green. We then lost at home to Mansfield 5-1 on Saturday. And then we lost last night at home again to Notts County. And Notts County, who I think had won 1 in 12 and had 1 point in 6 games. And it was easy. It was easy for them. And it was easy for Mansfield. Mansfield were 4-0 up, I think, at halftime. It was 3-0 after something like 18 minutes. I mean, we just fell apart. And it was toxic. Stefan Rupp, the chairman, made his annual appearance and pilgrimage for the Mansfield game.
Choose your moments. Oh,
so you can just imagine there's already a lot of angst and frustration against him for never showing up and for the situation that we find himself and, you know, become a scapegoat and all those things. And the one game he shows up for, we 3-0 down after 18 minutes. And he was getting, I think, plenty of dogs abuse. One of the fans who's on Twitter, Matt, who's a listener to the show, he approached him and was, you know, I think trying to have a conversation with him, telling him to invest or sell at some point, where some photos have gone viral of that moment.
Of course, the Bradford director's box is quite like with the fans, isn't it? I don't think it's, from what I remember, is it separate or is it kind of in amongst it all?
Yeah, so there's two kind of areas. So the true director's box is in the middle of the fans, just fancy seats, but in the middle of the fans. They were sat by Ryan's office, which is one of the exec boxes. But it was close to the pitch. It's still right there in the middle of everything. So, you know, all the abuse was flying in his direction.
I saw you call out the owner, you know, on Twitter. You know, it takes
a little bit emotionally.
It's the old DMAC out tweet, you know, straight away.
I try and be empathetic. You know, I get, as we've said, I get a lot of criticism from people for being too club friendly.
Of course.
I know there's a lot that goes on that you can never talk about, and that, you know, there's reasons for everything. There's reasons for all decisions. You can argue whether those decisions are good decisions or bad decisions, but there's information that everybody may not get to see that goes into why those decisions are made. So I've got empathy for that. But I think we're all at the end of our tether from an ownership perspective. And it's just getting worse and worse.
So move the owner thing to the side. And, you know, did you say it was Matt, one of the fans of the podcast, kind of approached him? So be interesting to hear, you know, did Matt get thrown out? Did the stewards, like, get hold of him or anything?
No. I think so.
Right.
No.
So let's put that to the side for a second.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the three games themselves. Before that, you were semi-informed, you were winning games. What fundamentally changed in the three home games? Is there a formation change? Was there missing players? Did you lose five players to injury, suspension? Like, something fundamentally is like a switch is flipped. So what is it exactly?
I think if we go to the game yesterday first, that's definitely injuries, and there's a couple of international call-ups. You know, we found ourselves trying a 3-5-2. I think it was 3-5-2. But anyway, three centre-backs with really out any – well, I guess we got one centre-back in there. You got full-backs basically playing in centre-back roles. So it just – tactically, it seems, I say tactically naive. He's obviously been around and done and knows what he's doing, but it seemed a little hopeful to play with, you know, fullbacks and centre half against the Notts County team that, while are struggling for form, I think have scored 70 odd goals this season.
Yeah, dangerous team.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that just, we were unbalanced. We go back to the Mansfield game. I mean, they were the best team that's been at Valley Parade all season. They played us off the park.
Yeah, excellent team.
Yeah, we probably weren't helped by the fact we tried to play Jamie Walker coming back from injury in a defensive midfield.
Oh, Jesus. He was a winger when he came along for us.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You're, again, square pegs in round holes.
Mm.
And not maybe that contributed a little bit, but we were so shell-shocked.
Yeah.
We were shell-shocked to be 3-0 down so quickly. It got so toxic so quickly that there was really no way of coming back from that. It was just, you know, the manager, Graham Alexander, talked at halftime to the players about, you know, do you want people to know you as quitters, or are you going to try and, you know, stand up for your teammates and make it kind of personal? And the Forest Green, I think, was just, you know, they wanted, not that they wanted it more. They scored in the first minute. They shut up shop. We couldn't find a way through them. They scored in injury time. There's just this lack of industry. You know, I don't think that we're not very good at finding solutions to problems.
Gotcha.
And so we just try and do the same old, same old.
So will he get the tin tack if they lose the next few games?
I think on one hand, there's a recognizance that our squad is so unbalanced that there is only so much he can do. But on the other hand, he's certainly not covering himself in any glory. And so there won't be many fans that you would meet who would be upset if it comes out tomorrow that he's been sacked.
Right.
So gotcha. I think I don't know which way Ryan is thinking. You know, is he thinking, we got to just, you know, stumble through the rest of the season and then the rebuild begins, or this is ridiculous, we got to start again for the fourth time this season. And therein, you know, lies some of the problem. Is that you have squads that are recruited for different styles, and then you have managers who have completely the opposite style. And so you have a mixture of nothing that it's just a hodgepodge.
Vicious cycle, isn't it? It's just constant, you know, the ownership thing with the team thing. So let's get back to the owner.
Yeah.
So the owner pops over from Germany.
Yeah.
You know, he's in town. Obviously, we all know he runs it as a self-sustainable model where he doesn't have to put any money in.
Yeah.
What's the end goal here for him, do you think?
I think that in his ideal world, the end goal is we continue to be sustainable. He may, you know, underwrite some small losses if we can't cover them through balancing the books and through player trading at the end of every season, right, to the point where we grow into his valuation. And you know, once we've grown into his valuation, then he can sell. And
what is his valuation?
So, you know, from what I've heard at the moment, he's still sticking around the 10 million
range. Gotcha.
So I see that he's just playing a time game. You're thinking that there's no downside, but it's just how long is it going to take to get the upside to where he wants to sell? But obviously there is downside. There's jeopardy, you know, of are you sleepwalking into the National League? Are you, we're going to have some serious challenges selling the number of season tickets they need to sell for a sustainable model next year. So I think that's going to force some real introspection, I think. You know, okay, so do I just quit now, get what I can, and just get out of this? Or am I going to dig my heels in?
God almighty. And do you think he'll be back anytime soon?
I would be surprised. maybe another year if he's still around. So I did have a question from Jonathan, who's also a City fan and a listener. He asked, what would you do about it? But I'm going to add to, what would you do about it if you weren't willing or able to put any money in? So you're having to run it on a sustainable basis.
So, well, I'd be selling, you know, at this stage. It is toxic. It's not going anywhere. You've got pitch issues. You've got stadium issues. You've got training ground issues. You know, maybe he's a sadomasochist, I don't know his personal life, but you know, there's no reason in this modern this cycle of business right now, it business is booming for clubs for sale. Yeah. You know, I know I've already been offered money for Peterborough, even in the last few, you know, recently to sell, even with all our start issues that were out there in the public eye. You know what I mean? It's like, people want to buy football clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, and by the way, Posh fans, calm down. I'm happy where I am. So, you know, if he doesn't, you know, first of all, if I were to support this group, so a couple of things you do. One, you need to ascertain, what is his figure?
Yeah.
Is the figure 10? Is it 10? Is it 12? You don't know. It could be more. Yeah. Who knows? You know, and those questions need to be answered. Every owner needs to come out and just, you know, a simple statement. What do you want to do with the club? There's no point in coming out and saying, I want to sell the club. Okay, right. What do you want to sell it for? What are you willing to do a deal on? So let's say he comes out and he says, I want 10 million quid. Mm-hmm. So there's another thing the fans can do. And I don't know if you seem to have the fan base. And I guess this could be ambitious. If you have 25,000 fans, let's say you're in the champ, would you sell 25,000 season tickets?
Yeah, I think the trajectory that we've been going with.
So 10 million by 10 million by 25,000 fans is 500 quid each. Mm-hmm. So why doesn't somebody, whether it's you or someone else, go and start a fund from all those fans to raise the 10 million for the fans to buy the club? Mm-hmm. If just to then sell it properly to someone else.
Yeah.
You know, basically, like you've seen it recently with clubs, you know, I think Newport were fan owned, they sold out, you know, it was a huge, the ex-Swansea guy owns it.
Yeah.
Wrexham fan owned club were able to then sell it to the right owners, you know. So if you as custodians are fed up and sick, well, now's the time, not protest, not throw tennis balls on pitches, not do whatever else, is to basically get an option to buy the club with a time period expiring, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, and go out and raise the money.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I know is that Bradford fans, you know, there's a big fan base. Yeah. You get 15,000 people every fucking year who spend 200-300 quid on the season ticket to watch the club basically tread water.
Not very good football.
Okay. So now can you push that further and say, well, if we get 25,000 fans at an average of 500 quid a pop, that's 10 million. Yeah. So you probably don't need 25,000, because if you say you took 20,000, a lot of them would probably donate more, and they would get an amount of shares in value. If it ended up getting bought for 10 and you've put in 10 grand or 5 grand, you would end up with percent and da-da-da-da-da. So maybe it's time to try and go down that route. But first of all, to do that, before you start raising, before you go down that mission route, you need to sit with the owner and come up with an agreed price and say, Stefan, I'm going to get you 10 million. Give me 6 months. I want a contract. 6 months to buy the club. Nothing's going to change in the summer because it's going to run exactly the same way. You're going to spend what you bring in. You're going to build a team on what you bring in and what you spend. So it's not like the fans who are buying the club are going to see due diligence and there's all these debts suddenly coming from nowhere. There won't be. You know, 10 million, 11 million, 9 million, whatever the figure is. Now you go out and you go raise the money as fans. And then you hire football-based people to go in there and basically run the club for you until you find a proper owner that you feel, whether it's from North America, Hollywood, wherever it might fucking be,
that can go in there. And the running cost and the investment that's needed.
Absolutely. What do you think about that as an idea?
Yeah. You know, it seems ambitious from a number perspective. I think that attempting something like that is a lot more proactive and productive than just protesting.
I hear you and I agree with you and whatever else, but I also know that, you know, these fans who keep buying tickets every year to go and watch this are passionate and they would spend money. Our fans showed up during COVID, you know, season tickets, all of that. They've shown up when they've been needed. You know, is it ambitious to try and raise 10 million off 25,000 fans? I don't think so. I think it's doable. I think if the message is right, I think you get some local investors, you get business people in Bradford, you get sponsors, they probably put more in. If you actually think about it, you probably raise a good chunk just from wealthy people.
Yeah.
And then for the fan side of it, you probably only need to raise 250 quid per person. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you personally, you'd probably stick a grand in or two grand in. So, you know, there you go. If I'm allowed, I'll throw a grand in as well. I don't know if I'm allowed, so I don't break any of our rules. You know what I mean? So my point I'm trying to make is that maybe it gets the conversation started. Yeah. Maybe it brings some publicity. Maybe it brings people who actually do have 10 million and want to buy a club. Maybe it gets it out there in the open worldwide for people who do want to be owners to sell it, you know, and maybe it just gets it to that point. Instead of it being toxic and you against them and, you know, against the owners and against management and whatever else, that's not going to strike in and tennis balls and all that stuff's not really going to do anything. So how do you move the needle? How do you get behind it? You know, so we can use the podcast to try and raise money, you know, for a commission, of course, I'm joking, saving Bradford, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? Or whatever you want to call it. So listen, I'd like to hear other football people's ideas. I'm sure there's lots of ex-Bradford players, football players who might want to get involved as well, you know, because, you know, there is a way to do this and there is a way to raise money and there is a way for this to be done. So if that's the goal for everybody is to try and move the owner on nicely without getting violent and silly, you know, well, then conversations like adults need to sit down and take place. Mm-hmm. If all the fans want, I'll go and fucking meet with the owner and do a deal for all the fans. Do you know what I mean? No problem. You know, and something can be done. So it's not hopeless. Maybe that's the goal. So I don't know. Maybe I'm talking through my ass. I don't know. You know what I mean? So I'm just thinking as a business person. So
yeah, it's definitely something to you know, to stew on, to have to think about how something like that may be possible. Because
absolutely,
at the end of the day, you need you know, I don't think a supporters group can necessarily fund the ongoing.
But you don't need to because your club wipes its face. You're wiping your face anyway. The beautiful thing is that, look, if the supporters end up buying the club, it definitely will mean you're not going to be as ambitious as before because, you know, Wimbledon have had a problem doing it, going up, going down, or whatever. It's doable. It's not impossible. Exeter have shown, other clubs have shown. But if you get the right people in to run it and you have a couple of years where it's just done right and the fans are passionate because they're now owners, they're not as angry when you're not winning games. They're not as angry because there's no rich owner to get angry about. The fans all come together and actually show up every week. Suddenly your budget from being 15,000 to 20,000 gives you more of a fighting chance in League Two. It can be done. It's not mission impossible. So you know, but you need good people in there running the place. You need a good director of football. You need I'm not having to go with the current people in there. I'm just saying it can be done. Yeah. And Exeter have shown it can be done. You know, other clubs have shown there is a route to this happening and doing it well. And then at that point you can end up selling it for 12 or 13 million and everyone gets a return on their money. Mm-hmm. And you get a rich owner in there because I've always said to you it's a sleeping giant. So it can be done. But so for people thinking, oh, it's bullshit, whatever, don't dismiss it. You know what I mean? So, you know, people have ideas and they think, well, that's not going to go anywhere. And then suddenly it goes somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get everyone behind it and you get momentum and you get some big hitters and you get some people and ex-players and everyone involved. It can be done. So it's not impossible. I think the hardest part is not raising the money, is sitting with that owner and actually agreeing a deal.
Seeing what time period on it. Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be the hardest thing. But you can make that happen. You know, with all the stuff happening out, regulators and everyone else coming into place, it can happen. You know what I mean? So that's my idea anyway. If you've got a better idea, hit me with it.
Watch this space, I guess. Definitely some interesting thoughts to ponder on there, because
you're in the procurement business. Go and procure $10 million from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. work the procurement magic on the sales price of a football team.
Exactly, yeah, exact mondo. You know what I mean? So anyway, it'd be interesting to hear Bradford posh fans, people in football, their ideas. You know, at the end of the day, all I know is that when fans want to do something and really put their passion and desire into something, they can make things happen. It can be done. So yeah, there you go. I'll say no more about it.
I'll leave today being inspired.
But there you go. I like it. So what else to talk about?
Well, you mentioned there the regulator. So the government announced plans for an independent regulator this week. I saw that as a football club, you put out a statement supporting that. I just wondered any thoughts that you may have on kind of how this is proceeding as well, in line with, we talked about the last week about the lack of agreement on funding from the Premier League down to the EFL as well, and how it's all kind of interrelated.
Yeah, I've seen a lot, you know, again, over today, TalkSport want me to go. I'm going over to the UK soon, so they want me on for like a week to, I think Simon Jordan's going on holiday, so they want me to fill in for a few days. And, you know, I've been asked the last few days, and I've no interest going on the radio the last few days or TV, because everyone's doing that and mm-hmm. having their say and whatever else. It's like, this is a kind of a watch and see moment. So, do our club support, you know, everything going on? Of course they do, you know, because we've spoken about this before. We feel that we're getting the bad end of the stick, the wrong end of the deal. And I think that time is now coming. We're coming to the, you know, what's that saying in life? You know, you meet your maker, you know, mm-hmm. for all the Premier League and the billions and the this and the that, whatever else. Is like, I'm kind of thinking now they might regret, you know, not have coming up with something a couple of weeks ago or whatever, and they've had months to do it. So for whatever reason, somebody's given them advice that they can get away with it and they can kind of play this out and whatever. I'm not sure it's going to end well for them. So I, you know, like I said last week, I encourage talk, I encourage negotiation, I encourage resolution, and I encourage a conclusion to this once and for all. So for it to work for everybody. Regards to the regulator, I've seen what they want to do. I've seen the backstops they want to put in place. Yeah, I need to see a lot more.
Yeah.
But most of the stuff they're talking about makes a lot of sense, you know, and I'm not against it. And a lot of it's obviously swayed to appease fans and to win votes. Let's mm-hmm. not kid ourselves. And again, mm-hmm. I don't want journalists taking a headline that I'm having a dig at the go. I'm not, you know, but anything that will help, great. If that helps you get votes, okay, fine. At the end of the day, if it makes our game better, if it makes our club safer, if it gives fans comfort to know that renegade owners can't come and go, all those things I'm for. But I need to see more meat in the bone. I need to see more what's in there. I need to see what's under the bonnet. You know, that and that in line with, I need to see us get a resolution and a deal concluded with the Premier League. So all those things are still up there in the air. We're open for interpretation, for debate, for discussion. You know, different owners come out and say things, you know, some good, some bad. Everyone has an opinion. That's the beautiful thing about democracy, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're all entitled to an opinion. We're all entitled to a vote. It's going to be an interest the next 6 months. That's all I'll say.
Do you think that at a club level, does this damage relationships between EFL clubs and Premier League clubs?
Well, I'd like to think no, because I've always said football is a very small, you know, I'm not into grudges. You know, mm-hmm. there are people I dislike, but it doesn't mean I won't do business with them. We've always spoke about Dale Vince.
Right.
You know, I'm not a fan of his at all. And we had that ruck and talk sport. But it wouldn't mean I wouldn't do business with Forest Green. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always said there's only 72 clubs. You know, I know there are clubs that haven't taken too kindly to me in certain things over the years in football, and I've had a bit of a grudge and then don't want to do business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one pretty recently. So I've never understood the thought process behind that. You know, I the COVID thing was quite a hairy thing. Everyone knew I disagreed with all the voters. You know, and the way they voted. And as it turned out, I was correct. So, you know, but some people all for that have had a grudge against me, even though they were in the fucking wrong mm-hmm. and stopped us playing football for their own fucking personal fucking, you know, good, you know, and you know, it should be the other way around. I should have a fucking grudge against them, but they have it the other way around. So fuck them and fuck their thought process and that whole thing. But it would never stop me doing business, because at the end of the day, like I said, the 72 clubs in the EFL, there's 20 in the Premier League. And whilst we might fight, and times I've been to we've had arbitration against clubs who've over transfers and different things, and we've won all of them. But for me, it's never stopped me wanting to do business with a club. I've had that from some clubs where we've beaten them in that situation, and then they're like hell-bent on Peterborough or whatever else. Mm-hmm. It's small-minded. Sometimes that comes from an ownership level. And whilst people might think, oh, Darren's a loudmouth and he's aggressive and he's whatever else. No, I would always do what's right in football. I would never stop. I'll give an example. Andy Holt and me, you know, had words a couple of years ago during COVID. You know that. I didn't agree with his approach during COVID. I was quite vocal about that as he. We invited him to have a discussion about it. He didn't want to do that. You know, obviously, when we came back, I think we hammered them 7-0. I tweeted that was one of the most enjoyable results. He then stopped following me on Twitter. You know, we didn't speak. So it was all of that. During that time, we had a player, Ethan Hamilton, you know, who wanted to go to Accrington Stanley. And, you know, I was holding out for a fee. It was getting late in the window. And, you know, part of me could have been, well, I don't want to help Accrington Stanley, so I'm going to stop that deal. And on the day the deal was done, you know, I spoke to Barry, the player, and I took all the stuff out of it to do with Andy Holt, me, Accrington, Peterborough. And let's be fair, over the years when we've tried to buy players from Accrington, we've come off on the wrong end. Hayden Jackson, other things. So I could have a real bee in my bonnet about, well, I'm not helping Accrington with a deal. But I rose above it, forgot about Accrington, Andy. I thought about the player. He wasn't going to play for us. The window was closing. He'd sit in our reserves. He's young. He would be going nowhere. And I was like, if that was my kid, I'm going to do the best for him as well as us. So we'll take the big sell on. We'll let the player go. Accrington are pleading poor mouth. They can't pay a transfer fee. But even though when we try and buy one of their players, it's $1 million, $2 million. So I let him go. And then he's done well at Accrington. He got sold to Lincoln. We got a percentage sell on. So we ended up making money on him. And that the moral to that story is I didn't let my own issues, grievances, but I'm not sure the other way around. And Andy's a nice guy. And we've recently, obviously, you know, it's kind of thawed out. I'm not sure he'd have done the same, you know, but that's up to him to answer. And there are other clubs out there. So at the end of the day, I think if there are clubs in the Premier League who don't want to do business with Peterborough, with Tranmere, with other clubs who are vocal about needing this deal done, I'd be very surprised. Steve Parrish is someone I have a lot of time for, a lot of respect. I had a great chat with him in August, deadline day or whatever else, about transfers, deals, whatever. I like him a lot. And he's quite, I think, vocal about not really wanting to do a deal, I think, you know, and because he has his, you know, but that's his right as an owner of a Premier League club. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't want to do business with Steve. And I would be amazed if Steve didn't want to buy a Peterborough player based on Darren McAnthony saying, I disagree with Steve Parrish. He's an adult. I'm an adult. You know, we're all running businesses and doing what we got to do.
You're not going to let your rival over a personal relationship.
No, and it's really funny because, you know, we had a really, really good chat. And the reason we had the chat was because, you know, we were trying to buy an attacking player, and we were getting quoted like a crazy transfer fee from Palace for this player who'd never played. He was like, he wasn't, you know, their manager didn't want him. He wasn't going to do it for them. He was going out on loan. We don't do attacking players on loan. So Baz rang them up to try to do a deal. We got back that it was like $400,000 or $500,000, whatever it was. Yep. So I kind of text Steve jokingly, like, have I done something to upset you? You know, whatever. He straight away rang me and he was like, listen, he said, let me tell you exactly how this goes. He goes, we're all there and a phone call comes through and it's Barry trying to buy one of our players. And he said straight away, he's like, if McAnthony and Fry are trying to buy this player, when you see the way they do business with Tony and all the rest of it, well, we need to be asking more for the player because that means they're probably going to sell him for like 5-6 million 2 years later.
Yep.
So, and I'm like, shit. But I'm like, if Cambridge had rang up or if Colchester had rang up, so sometimes your own success goes against you, but there's no grudge there. He's just explaining to me and his thought process would be probably just the same as mine. So, I totally get it, you know, and I think it's great that, you know, a League One chairman can speak to an owner, you know, of a Premier League club. I speak to David Sullivan by email, you know, but if those owners in the Premier League were like, well, fuck you, we've now got a grudge. You want this regulator. You want this happening. No, it can't be like that. You know, you have to be adults in this industry. You have to be adults about the way you run your business. So if you're going to close your mind off and just deal with a grudge, which, like I said, I've had that recently with a club who I'll probably never do business with again. But that's not on my side. That's their fucking problem. Mm-hmm. And it's quite frankly, it's pathetic. So, you know, I personally, I have no time and respect for people who think like that. And the reason I found out it was a grudge was what was going on and everything going on. And then I heard back from an agent about comments from a manager who had been there before, gone to a new job, who just said, tell the paper chairman, you know, now I'm at another club, I can tell them this, that there's no way they're going to, you know, and this is all over COVID. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, COVID, we were the fucking wronged party. So, yeah, I did find that fucking funny. So, anyway, fuck them. But, yeah, that's football. So, yeah. I guess there's now 70 clubs instead of 71 I can deal with, you know, down the line.
You just don't want that to be 10 clubs.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think there's as many small-minded people as those people. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's the prerogative. And sometimes it's not even owners. Sometimes it's, like, CEOs and people who aren't even, like, owners who, like, just act fucking silly. So, fuck them. Here's what it is.
It's easy to take things personally when it's business as well, I think.
And yeah, yeah.
People take certain things in negotiations because negotiations can be tough.
And it's like, sometimes it's, I'm not saying it's tough being us, but when it's us trying to get a player, it's like there's a what would you call it, a tax mm-hmm. that's on a price. You can ask Ryan that. You know, I inquired about your goalie.
Yeah.
And I dare say what he quoted me was a lot more than what he ended up going for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably thinking, oh, you know, Fry McAnthony did it. And, you know, I wanted it all up front. And I was like, it's not how we do business, but we do sell-ons, add-ons, did it. But, he, you know, and this was like early last summer, you know, when we were kind of looking out there at particular goalkeepers and stuff like that. So, you know, and he won't mind me saying that, but I'm sure Ryan was thinking, well, you know, if that was Gillingham, and they probably offered 75 grand less, and it was over, he probably would have done the deal. But the fact it was me.
Your track record, like, suggests that you have an eye for a talent. And so if you've got an eye for a certain player, then that probably brings value on its own.
And there's a part of Ryan thinking he's getting in the arena now, in the Coliseum, you know, and wanting to like get one over and trying to do the best deal for him whilst trying to get in the arena. So I get that. Sometimes there's that going on as well. So, you know, people don't understand when you're fighting all of those various things, it becomes very, very difficult with certain clubs when they think, you motherfuckers keep selling players for like millions and millions and millions. We're not going to get fucking stuffed on this one. We're going to get the... But the reality is we always make sure there's enough in there for clubs to profit on sell-ons. Mm. It's what we do, you know, never mind the fees we pay. We always make sure that any player we sell, do business on, the previous club has done pretty well out of them. And that goes for Premier League clubs too, i.e. Newcastle. So, yeah.
I'm just picturing Barry going in disguise.
Yeah.
Not position himself as being part of Peterborough United the next time he goes after a young player.
He did recently, to be fair, and he got caught. He was in disguise and he got caught by a lot of fans at a non-league game. And they got him in the car park and they got him. He was actually with the home fans. Do you know what I mean? So, and they kind of knew why he was there. So it was really funny because he then got a call from the agent of said player later on that night going, oh, were you such and such watching such and such? So, yeah. And straight away, it was like the player's on a grand a week. And, you know, as long as you give him 3 grand a week, he'll come to you. It's like, yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah,
we don't pay we don't play players that come up from non-league 3 grand a week. You know what I mean? They've got to earn the right. So, yeah, but yeah, it is what it is. You know, I mean, fascinating stuff. What else is happening?
Let's touch on a couple of other things. So, Notts Forest this week deducted 4 points and trying to get that appeal in this season, but it could take place after the season ends.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
I mean, how can you end a season like that?
How can you not put an appeal in a room in the space of a week? I guarantee if you ask the Forest lawyers and the Forest people, I'm sure they could present their case tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So what's holding the process up? How on earth can you do that when a season's finished?
Right.
That's unacceptable. So I'd be astonished if that happens. So there's no point in everyone praying Forest either stay up by 7 points or go down by 7, so it doesn't matter on an appeal. That's not going to work. You can't mess with people's emotions because Forest might win in the final game of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, and our Luton might win in the final game of the season and stay up by 2 points. And all their fans are, it's like VAR a month later.
I know, right?
Their fans are celebrating, spending weeks. You're suddenly sitting down, you're having recruitment meetings, players are on contracts going into next year in the Premier League. And then suddenly 2 weeks later, the panel sits down, makes a decision, Forest gets some points back, Luton are fucking down. You cannot put people in that situation. I'm sorry, some things just puzzle me. Like when you write rules and you do things for like you know, you have tribunals, you have meetings, you have whatever else. Why can't you do, you know, we had like one of our coaches from the youth team who got done for gambling.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about this in detail. And God bless him, he was doing bets like 3p accumulators. Mm-hmm. And he knew he'd made a mistake. He didn't know at the time. And I think he fessed up to it. And straight away, he wanted to fall on his sword mm-hmm. and just say, look, I made a massive mistake. And we were helping him as best we could to, you know, prepare and help and whatever. And he ended up getting a minor suspended ban, but it took, I think, 4 months.
Yeah.
And I don't think this guy slept. He honestly thought he was going to lose his career, his job and whatever. And I'm like, he's gone, you know, I've done it.
Yeah.
I did it.
So nothing will change in the next 3 months.
Yeah, here's what I did. I made a mistake. It's like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I fess up. Just, you know, do what you're going to do and let's do it now. Mm-hmm. Why are we, you know, we had the thing with the CEO. It went on for a year. It cost me legal fees. Of course, whatever, you know, let's get it done. What are we waiting for? You know, I did Zoom calls. I do a Zoom call in an hour. Like, again, what are we waiting for? So if Forest are ready for their appeal, you know, and whatever else, it's like you see some of the clubs that are still, you know, the rumors about them being investigated and they're going to get charged and it's gone on for years. What are you waiting for? Somebody's broken the rules. Dish out the punishment. Let them appeal. Have the process and do it quickly. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about a person problem here? Is there a lack of resources? Because I know there's enough lawyers in the world. I know there's enough people who can sit in tribunals. I think they get paid to do it, of course. So I'm sure there's lots of people in football who won't mind that job. So what are we waiting for?
So what do you think? So, you know, part of Notts Forest's rebuttal is that...
Didn't want to sell Brennan Johnson for 30 million. They wanted to sell for 45.
And how are you supposed to build a competitive squad in the Premier League when you get promoted before the money comes?
I agree. Simon Jordan said that in TalkSport. He said, like, you know, there should be a dispensation for new owners coming in and being able to rejig things, rebuild or whatever. I think, you know, in credit to the Nottingham Forest owner, when he came in and they were in the champ and then you saw when they got promoted, the cost of the team that got promoted and whatever else, what did you expect Forest to do? Why isn't there a rule in place? You know, like the Premier League love their rules. They love whatever else.
First year that you're in the Premier League, there's dispensation or something.
No, there should be like a 3-year forgiveness. There should be a 3-year immunity to a certain level that you're allowed to do business because you're trying to rebuild your club and make it a Premier League club.
Right.
Like, how else do you get to stay up unless you invest?
It just closes the trapdoor even further, doesn't it?
It does.
Just leading to that three up, three down, because once you get there, you can't invest to compete.
Yeah, and I'm seeing Leicester are now going to get hit with stuff or whatever. So I understand everyone wants everything run right and they don't want people like spending right and they want the rules followed and they want financial fair play. But I just think common sense needs to be applied also. And I think, you know, bring back the wealth tax, the owner tax, that if you're worried about overspending, for every pound not overspent, an owner has to put X into a bond. Do whatever. If that's your ultimate worry, the club will go out of business.
Like some escrow or something like that.
You protect that worry with the escrow idea or the owner tax. If that's not your worry and you don't want an unfair advantage and unfair competition, well, how can Nottingham Forest have been languishing in the Championship in League One for the last 15 years and coming up and rebuilding their whole football club be unfair competition? They were hardly going to be competing with the top four from day one. So why not give them a chance to allow themselves to build into a top 15 Premier League club? So, I'm just like some of the things, you know, and whatever, it's just, it makes your head spin, you know, on a swivel or whatever.
Yeah, but it's probably in the interests of the Premier League clubs for it to be like that.
Is it though? Because now you're going to have all of this at the end of the season. Is that in the interest of the Premier League?
The lack of jeopardy for a Premier League club are making it harder and harder for, easier for them to stay up. You know, I think about, you know, as the MLS or the NFL and the closed shops, it feels like it's just another way of trying to create more of a closed shop by making it harder for those that do come in to actually then be able to compete when they get there.
Yeah, no, I understand that. You know, but the one thing I like about the NFL also is that they dish out punishment and they do it quite quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you lose draft picks. You know, San Francisco yesterday were penalized a fifth round draft pick next year for basically filing the wrong paperwork on their salary protocol stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was a quick, swift resolution. They agreed, bosh, no appeal, move on. And San Francisco now lose a fourth round pick, a good premium pick next year. So there's punishment. So Forest Everton break the rules. And, you know, we're not talking about they've broken the rules by like £1 billion or £100 million or £200 million. It's okay. you lose one transfer window. So you cannot sign anyone over the age of 21. And you can put in there, if you want to help the EFL, that the only people you can sign are from the EFL. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and just say, well, if you said they're not in the forest, yeah, would you take that in the chin? You get one transfer window ban, bar buying EFL players. Mm-hmm. Agreeable? Yeah. No points deduction? Yeah. Good. All good. Stamp. Bosh. Move on. Forest win. The Premier League win. Publicity wins. The EFL wins. Yeah. That's how difficult to do. So again, I don't get it, you know? And like, you know, if one of these clubs that spent 400 million or 500 million are like, you know, really, really pushed the boat. And I saw Forrest's argument, I think it was about Brennan Johnson, where we'd sold him for 30 to stay within the in the confines. Us as a club would have lost 15 of what we sold him for in the summer.
Yeah.
So do you want our financial health to be better or worse based off getting in line with this PSR or whatever the hell it was called? It's contradictory. So, you know, I really don't get it. So that's going to be the headlines now. You could have one of the best title races in the last 20 years happen in the last 2 weeks in the Premier League. And we're going to talk about probably Forest potentially still having an appeals panel file. And whoever stayed up and they went down is going to be the big story.
Yeah.
Is that what we want? Is that going to help bigger TV deals? I don't think so.
And you talk about that championship running. So Leeds are now sitting on top.
Did I call that a couple of weeks ago? Did I say Leeds are going to win the league?
I think you may have done. When Leicester were 17 points clear, I think, at one point there. I think Leicester have still got a game in hand, but pretty poor form. And I mean, full credit to both Leeds and to Ipswich, who are continuing to make it competitive. I think Ipswich is still only a couple of points away.
Kieran McKenna needs manager of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you think they're having a dip, they come back. You know, they lose a horrible game at Cardiff last week. I watched the game in injury time. They're 1-0 up. And you think, oh my God, there's another body blow. And then they win the next game 6-0. I mean, he's got to be one of the... I mean, Ipswich need to go up to keep him, probably. You know, my old mate Mark Ashton, I'm sure he's trying to work miracles keeping him there, because there's got to be... If the 7-8 Premier League jobs come up in the summer, he's got to be at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he's done in a short space of time is miraculous. Right. Yes, Ipswich spent money, blah, 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 blah. But no, I'm sorry.
It's not just about spending money, is it?
No. If you look at most of their squad in the champ, a lot of them are in League One. So it's not about money. It's about coaching. It's about developments. It's about managing, you know. And he is he's the best of a young bunch. And, you know, if him and Russell Martin get promoted, and you can give credit as well to the Leeds manager, because he's won promotion in the champ before, but to the Leicester manager in his first job, is doing a great job. So three of those four are going up, and you've got some great managers in there. So it's going to be an interesting run in. But yeah, I mean, the Ipswich manager, incredible what he keeps doing. So well done to him.
Now, I do have to just bring up the Cup and Man United, Liverpool last Sunday, wasn't it? Felt like throwing defeat away from the jaws of victory.
Completely. Completely. Ask my wife. I was as angry as a Peterborough loss. I was smashing the wall here. Couldn't believe it. My words to Darren Ferguson, was cunt. Because he's obviously Man United. He's like, Man United never die. You know, and I was like, double cunt. So I very, very rarely have a go at Jurgen. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't understand is, we had a European game a few days before, which we'd won in the first leg. And I think Mo Salah played 90 minutes. And I know he's trying to find fitness because he's come back from an injury. But taking Mo Salah off in a cup game with 5 minutes left to go when there's a 2-week international break coming up, I didn't get I still don't get the logic. I bad defending, bad stuff, you know, happened and whatever else. We weren't at our best in that. But I thought we should have won that game so comfortably. That game should have been over. You know, again, you know, I guess Liverpool have got decisions to make. You know, as good as they've been, they're going to get a new manager. Do they sell Diaz and Gapco? Mm-hmm. They get better struggle. I'm still a Nunez fan. I'm a Salah fan. Jota, I love. Unfortunately, he's made of glass. He's never out for a week. It's always months whenever he has an injury. I would say they forget about the midfield rebuild and everything else. I would say they need another striker or two in the summer if they can move them to. If they want to keep competing at the top.
Yeah, and go to the next.
Yeah, take, you know, go to the next level. They're going to need a better player than Diaz. They're going to need better than Cody Gapco coming off the bench. So, you know, it's, frustrating. But it is what it is. Let's take the treble instead. We'll win the league, win the League Cup, and win the European trophy. So, you know, but that's what I can wish for.
So is it really the treble if it's not the Champions League?
I think anytime you win three trophies is the treble. I do. I think if we'd won the EFL trophy, won the League Cup, and won our league, you would call that a treble, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm.
So you're planning the trip to Dublin, then that'll be a heck of a an experience, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be a hell of a game, and it would be like, there's another British team there. It'd be a hell of a game. I mean, yeah. But no, I wouldn't be probably going. I've got so much going on in May or whenever the hell it is. Is it June? So no, I'm trying to figure out how I get the posh games during this time. Mm-hmm. But we're in playoffs and finals and stuff like that. But look, you know, it was a golden opportunity to win that FA Cup.
Yeah.
But listen, I've got to put a special mention to Coventry. I was texting with Doug, their owner, this morning. So I sent him a well done. Mm-hmm. I laughed when I saw Mark Robbins at the ball boy. I thought it was brilliant. You know, because that's something I'd fucking do. Mm-hmm. You know, as for calling them disgusting, what a load of bollocks. Do you know what I mean? So, but everyone has sour grapes when they lose. Coventry are just that team, aren't they? That don't want to be beaten and defeated. And, you know, again, you could argue, I guess, if it wasn't for McKenna, would Mark Robbins be manager of the year, you know, at Coventry? So.
And isn't it funny? I remember earlier in the season, I was talking, you know, worried Coventry fans writing in, concerned about the start of the season.
What did I say? Since day one, what did I say? They've had to sell players, they're bringing players in. Sometimes it takes time. You've got the right manager, the right staff, the right owner, all will be fine. So, you know, if they gate crash the playoffs, dark horse, because they're scoring goals now. Dark horse, mm-hmm. as regards to their strikers are scoring. I mean, as you saw against Wolves. So, and don't think Man United fans all celebrating that they've got to the final. Put a pin in that. Be careful.
Well, that's when you're at your most vulnerable, is when you're taking 100%. The teams for granted.
Coventry are a dangerous team. Mm-hmm. They're scoring goals for fun. They're a dangerous team. I think they'll be a very dangerous team in the running. You know what I mean? So, be interesting. So, I wish Mark, Doug, you know, Dean, everybody there the best, because they, you know, we've a great relationship with them this season, and I want Coventry to succeed.
All right, well, let's call it a day there then. We've got a number of questions. We'll keep those over for next week, but please don't stop sending those in. You can send them to contact@truthfootball.com. We'll probably wait. I think next week, your game is next Friday.
I think we'll do the following week. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's best after the Easter weekend and stuff, and try and get in there, because we've got the cup final then the week after that. So, mm-hmm. you know, we can do a build-up and stuff to that. So, yeah, for the fans out there listening to our ideas, any questions, obviously hit Phil up. You know, let's get the emails in. And again, thank you for the support. Magnificent. Appreciate you all.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you all again soon. Enjoy the rest of your week. Take care, everybody.
Take care.